Hi, this is Gary Matthews. You're listening to Fightin' Phillies Talk Podcast.
Hey, this is Chris Wheeler. Listen to Phillies Talk Podcast.
This is the Baron from the Phillies. Listen to Phillies Talk Podcast.
Now it's time for some baseball talk on Fightin' Phillies Podcast. Here's Rich Baxter bringing you the latest Phillies news, interviews, and analysis.
And welcome aboard to this week's edition of Phillies Talk. It's the Phillies Talk Podcast coming to you live and in person on Jackie Robinson Day, April 15th, 2020. My name is Rich Baxter, and I'm joined with Mr. Matt Beasy. How you doing, Matt?
Hey, Rich, how are you? Happy Jackie Robinson Day.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's already here. Normally tax day. I'm not sure if they plan that to be coinciding on the same day, but honoring number 42 today, all over baseball. And of course, baseball isn't being played, but MLB Network's got a whole day worth of programming related to it, and some even some Phillies action coming on a little later tonight on Jackie Robinson Day. Honoring him, and a couple of years ago, I believe it was a broadcast from that time. And you know, we don't have baseball; we have that to focus on today.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure, Rich. I put this out yesterday, but I believe that MLB.com. For anybody who's online, if they want to go to it, at 4 p.m., they're supposed to do at least a partial, if not a full rebroadcast of last year's Phillies-Mets game from Jackie Robinson Day, including the pregame ceremonies and the remembrance of Jackie Robinson that accompanied that pregame ceremony. And that's at 4 p.m. on MLB.com.
Yes. 2019 Jackie Robinson Day, Mets and the Phillies. And have you been to many Jackie Robinson Days at the ballpark yourself?
You know, I haven't. And I've had a number of years. Right now I have season tickets, and my wife and I have had season tickets probably about, at least we gave them up for maybe 3 years there, but I would say over the last 11 years, like eight of the 11 years, we've had season tickets, and only one of the days, it was 2012, do I remember being at Jackie Robinson Day. In fact, I took a picture in front of the Jackie Robinson statue that day, and I put it up today on my Twitter feed at Matthew Beasy and shared it at Phillies Bell. So that was 2012, and that's the only one that I remember actually being at. It was a nice day, I know, because I wore T-shirts and shorts, so the weather was pretty good on that one. It's a little chilly day.
Yeah, it's a little chilly in the Delaware Valley, New Jersey, Delaware, PA today. And yeah, I myself had the occasion on a Sunday plan, because I used to have a Sunday plan for many years to be at a Jackie Robinson Day, just happened to fall on a Sunday. But everybody was in number 42. And I struggled to know who some of the players were. You know, you look for that familiar number sometimes, and, you know, everybody wearing 42. And I don't know how long it's going to go on, but that one I could do without.
What, the players wearing 42?
With seeing every player in the same jersey. I know what it's for, and I know it's an honor and things like that, but when you're there at the park, it's like, well, who just got that hit? You know, like, or the guy at first is wearing 42, and then somebody just got a single, he's in 42. It's a little confusing.
I understand that, and it's probably a way of honoring Robinson that will at some point pass. I don't think that'll happen forever. It's what they're choosing to do right now, and wouldn't surprise me to see at some point if they go to some, you know, they wear a patch on the uniform, and they're certainly always going to have some kind of tributes. You know, the way that ballparks are these days, they're multimedia experiences, you know, so they'll put up videos of Robinson and, you know, tribute, you know, statements from various players and officials from around the game up on the scoreboards. So there are plenty of ways, you know, in which to remember and honor Robinson and what he did, you know, to help move forward that racial equality in baseball and breaking the color barrier. There are plenty of ways to do that without every single player having to wear the number 42 on a given day. But that's what they choose to do now, and we'll rough it out on that one day, I guess, for now.
Yeah, it's interesting the way they, you know, have all that coordinated and things. And as you said, yeah, a few years ago, I remember only certain players wore the number 42 to honor Jackie Robinson. This was before they all started wearing the jersey, which is, I want to say maybe 10 years going on now, possibly. But yeah, I do remember before that it was only two, maybe three players on the team that wore the number. So yeah, one of my favorite days at the ballpark, all special honor type days are great days at the ballpark. I remember over at Citizens Bank Park for the Hall of Fame Day. And that's always a great time to be at the ballpark. I believe it always falls on a Sunday, if I'm not mistaken, somehow. And if you were had tickets to that game, they usually announce, you know, with your ticket, you can get into the Hall of Fame for free up in Cooperstown. So that was another one of my favorite days to be at the ballpark.
The Phillies run a lot of really good giveaways and promotions every season. So I don't know if they're you know, fans, people, anybody who would listen to this podcast and probably anybody who follows us on social media is already a Phillies fan and goes to Phillies games. But if we do have anybody who doesn't get out to the ballpark very often, once we do start playing again, just go to Phillies.com and look at the schedule. And it's very easy to navigate around, and they list pretty easily for you to track the different giveaway and promotional days and pick out something. There's plenty of good, interesting items that are being given away and promotions that take place, and pick out something that interests you and go to the game. Great giveaways for kids. I remember you mentioned that you had Sunday plans. We had a Sunday plan for maybe 5 or 6 years in a row. And one of our little personal, you know, problems with the whole Sunday playing giveaway thing was that the vast majority of the giveaways were for kids, and me and my wife were well past being kids. So we would go to these Sunday games, and I'm like, I paid all this money for these tickets, and you know, they won't give me an item. I can't get a giveaway item. You know, some of them were pretty decent. I mean, I'm not going to wear a kid's size t-shirt, obviously, but there were, you know, if they gave away, you know, eight things to kids during the course of the year, probably four or five of them were would have been of interest to adult collectors too. So
absolutely,
I did take my grandkids a couple of times, so they were able to get the items a couple of times, but mostly it's me and my wife, and we're like, yo, we're the ones putting out the money. Slide us a giveaway item.
Yeah, back in the day, I remember batting helmet day was always one of my favorites as a paying entrant to the ballpark. Of course, you know, somebody taking you to the game, either a father or uncle, something like that. And I can very clearly remember one of my uncles had a good answer for that. And I believe it might have been batting helmet day. And we got into the park. Of course, the kids got their batting helmets, and he wanted one. So he goes around and goes back to the one of the guys giving away and folds up a bill and hands it to him, and he came away with with a batting helmet. So he was pretty wily in that respect. He knew how to game that that system a little bit, but don't know that that would happen in this politically correct world today that we live in. But
and it seemed a little tougher at Citizens Bank Park. You know, back in the day at the Vet, you know, I think the things were, you know, the old story of everything has a price. I think everything had a price at the Vet, you know, especially in like the 70s and 80s, maybe.
And this was at the Vet in the 70s, I want to say. And yeah, you had multiple entrances, you know, big dome, or not a dome stadium, but a big bowl stadium like that. You had, you know, thousands of people going in. You had literally, I don't know, I want to guess 100 employees handing stuff out. So you had a lot more opportunity for that. But yeah, I always remember, you know, where there's a will, there's a way with that kind of stuff. But yeah,
you still have plenty of people at the gates, you know, but employee wise, but it's a different environment. Like you say, it's a different day, a different age, and security's a lot tighter, you know, both organizationally and the actual law enforcement security. So Major League Baseball, you know, there's more security now around items as far as autographs and things like that. So it's a different world, like you say, in 2020 than it was in 1975 or 1980.
Yeah, absolutely. It's amazing the way things change like that. But as we were talking about a little bit before we started the show, we're both sort of chomping at the bit for some baseball. We have been, you know, some sort of return to normalcy, I guess is a proper term, where you just, you know, you want to go out to a store, you want to go here or there, you can just go about it and not have to think about it. Nowadays you have to, you know, do I have a mask? Do I do this? Do I do that? What's the procedures? You know, a lot of these stores have procedures and all, but I suddenly started thinking about maybe the ballpark at some point. Say we do have a season that starts later on this year, the precautions that are going to be involved in that once fans do return, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be something that I think we're going to live with for, you know, at least a few years. I initially I thought we would, you know, come up with a cure, fold it up and forget about it. But it just doesn't seem like it's happening that way now, even though we're sort of more technologically advanced than ever. It seems like we're still battling this virus and this disease and things like that. But have you heard the latest about restarting a season in Arizona, or the split Florida-Arizona setup? And which one do you like the better of the two?
I follow it pretty closely, Rich, and every day at philliesbell.com, sometime around the late morning or early afternoon, it seems like it's been late, early afternoon lately, but we run a Lunch Bell piece, it's called. And in the Lunch Bell piece, we give all the latest news and updates about MLB and the Phillies, but all the Major League Baseball news the last few days, at least, has been regarding just what you talked about, that topic of possibly opening up the game, when to open it up, how to do it, how would it look. And the big story that broke yesterday, and we're talking right now, now, you and I, on a Wednesday afternoon, April 15th, as you said, tax day. But the big story that broke yesterday, late yesterday, was that Major League Baseball, and that includes the Phillies, is going to be making thousands, as many as 10,000, I heard, employees of from across almost all of the 30 clubs. The first piece that I saw written came out of The Athletic, and trying to catch the writer, but that was Molly Knight of The Athletic. And she said that 27 of MLB's 30 clubs had volunteered to take part in this research study, and what they're looking at, it's called the COVID-19 seroprevalence study. That's not zero with a Z, that's zero with an S. And it's COVID-19 seroprevalence study. And what they're looking for is they're going to be testing roughly 10,000 overall employees, not only players, but also families, team staff, ushers, part-time employees, concessionaires, people from different ages, genders, different socioeconomic backgrounds. And the idea is to get these people who interact with a large number of people in their jobs and test them for the antibody to COVID-19. And they're trying to find out, you know, how prevalent is this spread of COVID-19 throughout the United States? And they're, you know, they're hoping that that will help them really coalesce the ability of decision makers at the political level to make good decisions about opening up within weeks, rather than having to wait. This kind of study might have to take years usually to do, but with it, not just Major League Baseball, that's 10,000 people from Major League Baseball. We're talking about people from various other organizations and businesses across the United States. This is going to be a massive undertaking that, and it's just a pinprick that they have to go through and then submit. And they're going to be able to get results back, as I said, from a huge number of people within, you know, probably by May 1st or a little bit after that, maybe, you know, certainly between May 1st and May 15th. So, you know, not just baseball, but society at large, the politicians who make the decisions, they're going to have a lot better information as a result of this study that's being run. And this study is being run out of by a number of different organizations. Stanford University and a couple of other places are involved. I think Stanford's the lead one. So be interested to see what the results are of that study. And then what we're going to see is, you know, President Trump is already talking about wanting to open up, quote, open up by May 1st or early May. I think that the president's maybe a little optimistic there, but I think that's what he's supposed to be. I think that the job now is to, now that we've seen a leveling off or a flattening in of the curve, so to speak, in almost every place that you look in the United States, if not every place. And the problem overall, the numbers are not nearly as bad, though there are, that's not to belittle people who've lost their life, but the numbers are nowhere near what the worst case doom and gloom doomsday scenarios that people were putting out just 2-3 weeks ago. And I think it's time to start talking about opening up the country again, opening up states, opening up municipalities like Philadelphia for business again. Not today, not tomorrow, not next week, but we need to start having that conversation. We can't kill the country and kill the economy just because we have an illness that's out there that is making people sick and that is killing people. Philadelphia population as of 2018, Rich, was 1.584 million people. Now, Jim Kenney, the mayor, today put out, and he does this frequently, you know, how many people have died, how many people have gotten sick, and he puts those raw numbers out, and we went up by a few hundred or a few dozen today, and it's all doom and gloom from Kenny. But meanwhile, that those numbers, if you break down what his numbers are, turns out that 0.469%, not 46, not 4%, 0.469% of the population of Philadelphia has tested positive. 0.014% have died from this virus. So, you know, more than 99% of Philadelphia has either not tested positive or has tested negative. And, you know, an infinitesimally small percentage-wise number of Philadelphians have died from this. So I think that it's past time, or it's at least time now to start talking about what is an acceptable number to open up for. And is the acceptable number zero? Do we say, well, we have to be able to be sure that nobody is going to get sick or die from this illness? Well, we'll never open up then, Rich. So it's time to start having the conversation, like, about in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, the region, the Northeast, and around the country. And that's how you'll see it. You'll see the president probably in conjunction with the organizations and the individuals that he has surrounding him, the different committees that are advising him, will come out with a recommendation at some point and say, based on all the information I'm getting, it's time that we can start opening up businesses again. And then the secondary phase of that will be the states reacting. And some states will be in a better position to say, we're going to open up, say, on May 1st or May 15th. Other states may say, we think we can do it, but we want to do it, you know, more like June 1st, or within each state, maybe certain areas that a state will open while others remain closed in the larger metropolitan areas like New York, Philly. And then gradually you may see those big cities, you know, open up again. Now, when you're talking about baseball 2020, where are we going to play? When are we going to play? I really don't think, from everything I'm seeing, I don't think you're going to see anybody go into – I have season tickets. I don't think I'm going to be using them in the 2020 season. I don't see people going down to ball games at Citizens Bank Park. And I don't mean because people are afraid to go to ball games. I just don't think that Major League Baseball is going to do it that way. I believe you're going to see them try one of these efforts. The two realistic possibilities are everybody plays in Arizona in the one central location, or they do the split locations where the people who spring train in Florida in the Grapefruit League all go together down there. The people who spring train in Arizona in the Cactus League all go out there. They split them up. They play kind of two restructured leagues, and then maybe, you know, have a playoff in those leagues. And at some point they test everybody out of that. Everything looks good. They'll get the two winners of those leagues together to play a quote World Series. In some form, I believe you'll see baseball played this year, a very slashed number of games, maybe half the usual number of games, maybe between 80 and 100 games in a quote season, then some kind of maybe expanded playoff season where more teams than usual have a shot in a playoff. So it's the 2020 season, should we get it underway, I think it'll be obviously like nothing we've ever seen before. And my belief is that it'll be a one-off, that within the next, you know, certainly within the next few months, we'll have treatments that have been approved for this. Testing will be a lot more prevalent within the next month, I believe. Treatments will be available within the next few months, and hopefully a vaccine, which is the real, you know, the real kicker that we need, will be available sometime by next spring. Maybe we can have a quote normal season in 2021.
Yeah. Which one do you prefer personally? Would you rather see the realignment being proposed from the Florida/Arizona type setup, or would you rather see all 30 teams out of Arizona in a traditional type of setup?
Well, I think for me, it would be more interesting if they split it. If they did a Grapefruit League and a Cactus League and ran two different, it'd be almost like the old days that you and I grew up with, Rich, where you had the American League and the National League, you know, and there was no different rules. There were no interleague play, you know, so you would just have the us in the Grapefruit League, the them in the Cactus League, and we could follow them and almost track it, like, you know, it would be almost like watching two different, you know, it would be watching two different baseball leagues taking part of in major league action, you know, during the course of the summer, which would, I think, would be interesting in itself. And then if the carrot were out there that at some point in November, even early December, at some neutral location, they would be a World Series of the winners of those two leagues, you know, that would make it interesting to me rather than have everybody in one place. But that's, you know, my personal preference. I would really just like to see baseball. It's going to be different. It's going to be unusual watching them play games. And, you know, it'll be almost like, I remember I played men's softball for 15 years and we would have maybe, you know, besides the players, we had a pretty good following of girlfriends and wives and kids who came to our games. And even for a big playoff or championship game, we probably had no more than a few dozen people at our games. So, you know, to listen to a big league player, if they put this on TV, you know, and follow games with, you know, no sound, you know, no roar of the crowd when a home run is being hit, or, you know, to react to a great play at the plate, you know, it takes something out of it. You know, now I'll still enjoy the game. I'll still be at home going, you know, yelling at a great play or, you know, cheering for a home run. But it's going to be weird watching the games, I think. And one thing I hope they don't ever do is canned, you know, noise as far as like crowd noise or anything. I hate sitcoms with canned laughter. You know, so we'll see.
ESPN's Crack of the Bat. I don't know if you're familiar with the way they mic the stands and, you know, that crack. It sounds like it's hard to describe, but I know exactly what you're saying because that's what ESPN sort of does with their Sunday baseball program. It crack of the bat sounds like, whoosh, you know, every time a ball is hit. So, but the only thing I have a problem with the realignment, if it goes to the Grapefruit League and the Cactus League, is the tremendous, just that, the realignment. The Yankees would be in the same sort of division as the Phillies, the Blue Jays, Tigers, and Pirates, simply because they're very close to one another in that Florida area where they train. But I personally wouldn't look forward to interleague games like that myself. I mean, if it had to come to that, I guess it would be all right, but I would prefer, if at all possible myself, and even an 82 game season where it was more normal, so to speak, rather than a radical realignment. But we'll see what happens. And like you said, right now the situation's fluid. They're making determinations when and if certain economies can open back up again and, you know, resume a normal, somewhat of a normal existence again with this. And it's still, it's tough. I was listening to another podcast last night, and Kevin Cooney, probably remember, he used to work for many various outlets in Philly. I think he's with PhillyVoice.com. But he had Todd Zielecki on his small independent podcast. And, you know, they were talking about what they missed the most is the routine of the daily routine of following baseball, you know. And then they went through the routine, you know, at 2:15, 2:30, we get to the ballpark. By 3:15, we're meeting with certain players and things. 4:00, we're at dinner. Then at 4:30, we meet with the manager. So it's, you know, their whole way of life has been interrupted as well with the way that they have to cover the game. And traveling, of course, and things like that. So it was interesting to hear their perspective of it. And they're not any closer to the players than you or I, believe it or not. You know, they were clamoring about the for any sort of interviewing or things like that, you know. So they're sort of falling in the same boat as us bloggers that don't get paid to follow the team and have an inside track on it all. It was interesting to hear that.
Well, you know, somebody like Cooney, Kevin spreads himself around a lot of different, you know, sports, I believe. That's, you know, I follow Kevin pretty well, and he does a lot of different sports, a lot of different levels. Todd Zlucki is a little bit of a different animal in that he's a beat writer. He's a Phillies beat writer. He's all Phillies, and he, or various major league issues, but mostly the Phillies. And he probably does have, his whole life's been turned upside down. I'm sure every year, you know, every season, at least baseball season, like you said, he does certain things at a certain time of the day that is based on what is the team doing on that particular day. And the team's not doing anything right now. So certainly the beat writers, people like Megan Montemuro of The Athletic and Todd Zlucki and Salisbury with NBC Sports Philadelphia. I mean, those people, you know, their life is baseball and the Phillies, at least their work life. And that's been turned upside down just like everybody else's has. Now, I think that one thing that they have, people like that have as a benefit that maybe you or I don't have or have to work harder for, maybe, is access to the players. While they can't talk to them every day like they do normally in a locker room or on the side at a ball game, they certainly have a relationship with at least some, if not a lot, of these players. And it would be a lot easier for a Todd Zlucki or a Megan Montemuro or a Jim Salisbury to call up Bryce Harper or call up JT Realmuto or whoever, any of the players, Matt Klentak, and say, hey, can I get you on a podcast, or can I get you on a Skype session, that kind of thing. So, you know, while those people have their professional lives interrupted, certainly they do have more access to those players. The thing is, what are you looking for from those players? You know, the players aren't doing anything either except working out and hanging out with their families. So how many pieces can you write about, you know, JT Realmuto was hanging out by the pool today with his wife and kids. You know, Andrew McCutchen was taking a jog this afternoon. You know, Bryce Harper was lifting weights today, you know, changing diapers in the afternoon. There are human interest, obviously, and player fans would like to hear about that from time to time, but it's not the game, you know, and that's what people want to hear about is the game. There are only so many stories you can write about what a guy had for dinner tonight, or, you know, how he was splashing around in the pool with his kids today. I see Brett Myers. I follow Brett Myers online, and he's got an exciting life outside the game. You know, he's got a boat. He's out on his boat with his kids. He's cooking out. I mean, he's living a good life. Some of these guys, you know, really, they made good money in the game, and they're basically holed up in compounds, you know, where they have water access, you know, for boating or fishing. You know, they're big, you know, I mean, you and I might have a little backyard. I mean, these people have ground, you know, that they can go out on with their kids and, you know, take walks on their property, you know. Not, I take a walk with my dog around the block every night, you know. So, you know, I'm not belittling what they have. God bless them. But I'm just saying it's a different lifestyle. So I enjoy watching some of it sometimes. But like I say, it's not game action. And that's what fans really want to see. I mean, it's been something along the lines, I put it on my lunch bell piece today, but I believe it's been 20 days now. This is the 20th day that Major League Baseball would have been playing. So basically we're 3 weeks into this, what would have been the normal regular season. And we've lost those 3 weeks. We'll never get them back. And how much can you write about players, you know, eating and playing and working out for 3 weeks? You know,
that's true. Yeah.
We want to be game. We want to be talking about games.
I think they want to more or less get their opinions on, you know, what's going on, the league realignments, those sort of things. But it's a tougher thing than many people realize to get in touch with them, I guess. So that's one of the hurdles that they're facing. And jumping back to the story on the testing, I was doing a little reading on a couple articles. It was interesting. There's 27 teams out of the 30 are participating, what I've read. The Phillies are only volunteering the front office staff. There'll be nobody beyond that, apparently, from the Phillies, according to an article in the Inquirer. And I can't seem to find the remaining three teams concretely that won't be participating at all in the study. It's very interesting to find that out, to see, you know, why they would not want to participate in this study. And of course, you know, people would have to opt into it. I'm sure it's not just because you work for a certain organization, all of a sudden, okay, yeah, it's mandatory that you give us this test sort of thing. But interesting that there are three teams that are not part of this.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the thinking is there, Rich, but you know, that's on them. But undeniably, when you're talking about 10,000 people, great cross-section of people across Major League Baseball, representing 27 teams. And even though the Phillies is a front office, there are a lot of people involved in the Phillies front office operation. So Major League Baseball is certainly doing its part in this massive, you know, it's basically a massive COVID-19 antibody study. And they're going to get some important results out of this. So I'll be looking forward to seeing what these results are from this test.
Yeah, and if they
it's going to be a few weeks, you know, it's not we're going to be looking forward to results of tomorrow or this week. So, you know, we're going to have to wait for a little bit to get these results.
Yeah, and hopefully they'll be shared for people that want to know about it. But certainly interesting. And of course, we've had Rhys Hoskins taking part in MLB The Show, has the 30 teams with 30 different players out of MLB stock that are playing one another on a nightly basis, anywhere from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. usually. And the schedules are very varying. I ran a special on the first two times that Rhys Hoskins was playing opponents, but I haven't really did anything since with it. Have you had a chance to check that out at all?
Yeah, it's, in fact, he played last night, and that update is on the, in our, like everything else regarding the Phillies, it's stuffed into our lunch bell piece today. But Rhys was 3-1 last night. He went 2-2 his first night of playing, so he's 5-3 now, which puts him in second place behind Jeff McNeil of the Mets in the NL East division of this Players version of MLB The Show. And I looked at the schedule. He's not on the schedule again all of this week through Friday. So I would guess you won't see Hoskins play again until either the weekend or early next week is my expectation. But Rhys had a pretty good night last night, won 3 out of 4. So he's up to 5-3 now. So we've got a winning record. We got somebody winning there. We're in second place in the division, at least in that way.
That's cool. Yeah, because when I first saw the first night, it seemed like it was going to be a long, long 3 weeks for him before they make it to something on the order of a playoff for this. But yeah, Joey Gallo, I think, is 8-0, leading the way there. And he used to be a gamer. You can probably tell his reactions and things like that are a little bit faster in these games. But it's been interesting to listen to some of the broadcasts. You know, you get to know a little bit more about the player, the guy that, you know, plays first base for the Phillies. You hear his personal comments and things like that. So very interesting on that respect. And you're watching a video game. So it's, you know, some people have interest in it and some people don't. But it's been something to, you know, occupy your time with.
I don't know if you've ever caught it, but I'm flicking through the channels sometimes. I come across this thing called the Simulation Football League games on television. And it's basically a video game on your TV, but it's like you're watching an NFL game, but it's a video game. But it takes up your whole screen, and I'm not a gamer. I mean, I do not play games. I've never owned a gaming system. I haven't played video games other than piddling around maybe with my nephew on his system 15 years ago. Since I played Pac-Man and Space Invaders and, you know, in arcades 35 years ago. But I know what's going on. I see them. And the graphics on these games are just incredible, Rich. I've often told my wife, I say, between the internet and my writing on the game and managing Phillies Bell and, you know, spending time with her, and we watch, you know, binge watch shows on cable TV and all, I try to read a little bit here and there and listen to music. I can't imagine having a video game system these days with as realistic as they are. I don't think I'd ever come out of my basement. You know, they'd find me down here, you know, growing a beard and, you know, chewing on whatever's available and, you know, not showering for days. I mean, the stuff is really I actually sit there and I watch sometimes these simulation football league games. They're so realistic and so well made. And I've seen the Major League Baseball ones. They're it gets better every single year, it seems. And I can imagine a time where, you know, 15, 20 years from now, they'll almost be looking like we're controlling actual human beings, you know, movements up there. It's getting that close to the real thing.
Yeah. It's amazing the way they have the graphics now. It's almost like you said, they're actually playing a game. You have to take a double look. And of course, you know, we're about the same age, so I've heard some younger players that are critiquing the game saying, oh, well, you know, some of the players are a little blocky here and there. Yeah, well, they look great.
They should have saw what we were playing with 35 years ago. I remember when they first came out with Mortal Kombat, you know, and they had the two fighters, you know, taking on each other in different martial arts and things like that, and they bring out weapons, and you know, they were pretty bloody and violent. And but I remember looking at them saying, these things are incredible, you know. Now, you know, that those early Mortal Kombat games are nothing compared to the motion and the graphics that they have today. So, you know, I think it's like anything else, you know, younger kids, they just don't know, you know, they don't appreciate, you know, how good it actually is. And I think 10 years from now, they'll look back and go, whoa. I remember having my dad buying us the only video game system I ever had very briefly when I was a little kid in the mid 70s. My dad got us Pong. If you remember Pong, it was like the first video game system was available at home. It was tennis on your TV, and it was just a blip that you hit back and forth, you know, between two controllers your controller was like a sliding bar that went up and down your screen. And if nobody's familiar with it, especially young kids out there, Google the YouTube for Pong, P-O-N-G sometime, the old video game. And that's what I had on my TV. And I remember being a kid thinking, and this is great because you could actually control the TV. You were actually, you know, before you just could watch it. You couldn't interact with it at all. With Pong, yeah, you could interact. You were actually on your TV controlling something.
You were a participant in the television.
Now it's like, you know, Pong is like nothing. Although I still think Pong's a great game, but.
Yeah, back in the day, that was like, oh man, that, I remember the first time I played that, and I was like, wow, this is space age, you know, like on the screen, you know.
Space age is not space age anymore, right? It's like space age. That's like nothing now. Space age. That's 40 years ago. You know, it's incredible though. In the space age, Rich, we landed men on the moon on a pretty regular basis from the time that I was 7, 8 years old up until I was a preteen. For about 4 years there. I don't know how many manned missions there were to the moon, but there were probably half a dozen. And we haven't landed a man on the moon in over 45 years now. So that's a little, that seems a little unreasonable to me. So I'm looking forward to us. I mean, I know money can be spent, you know, in other ways, but I don't think we should ever stop looking to move forward, you know, as a civilization. So we're getting a little afield there, far afield with the conversation there, but
well, it's okay. It's part of the program here, but yeah, I agree with you. I wholeheartedly agree with you that they, you know, should do more like that. It's part of the tax base. They can afford it. We're paying the freight. So why not keep innovating, and, you know, and it'll take out some of the crowd that says, oh, that was all staged. We never made it to the moon. And they recorded it in front of a green screen. And I'm like, you actually believe that? Yeah, that's.
Well, there are, you know, conspiracy theorists and ridiculous people, you know, all over the place, Rich, and there always have been and always will be. But while I don't necessarily, you know, think that there's never been a conspiracy, of course there have been conspiracies, but that conspiracy in particular, no, that one is even ridiculous to contemplate.
Yeah, we're gonna have to keep our focus back on baseball. We'll consider conspiracy on loaded baseballs that were supposed to happen last year. That I might buy, you know, those sort of type of things. But well, anywho, we've tried to entertain our best for this week on Phillies Talk. Check us out. Matt's over at PhilliesBell.com. You can follow him right over there. And as he said, he does a daily piece. I don't always get a chance to read it, so check it out over there at philliesbell.com. Does a wonderful job, and a great job on history of the game, history of Philadelphia and Phillies baseball.
Yeah, we try to put out items every single day, Rich. It's, you can catch us at Phillies Bell on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Try to get the history items out in the between early to mid morning, maybe between 8 and 11 a.m. at Phillies Bell on Twitter, and then try to sprinkle it across Facebook and Instagram as the day goes along. And our original articles come out during the day at Phillies Bell, and we always link them up at Twitter and at our Facebook site. So a lot of good stuff there. And the lunch bell thing is a little bit of a misnomer. That's when it comes out. But that lunch bell piece can be read at any point, obviously, during the day. It's filled with really good links on the most recent baseball and Phillies items that we've been able to curate from around the web. Today, I would say, hey, take a good look at it. And there's an interesting video that we shared from Sporting News on there about the Korean Baseball Organization. The professional league over in Korea is about to open. They're going to be trying to open, I believe, in May. And Rick Westhead and Scott Mitchell, the Sporting News, did an interview with Jamie Romack, who was a former big leaguer, played with a couple of different ball teams in Major League Baseball. And he's one of a number of former MLB players who are set to open the season over there in Korea. And a really good interview from Sporting News, those guys, about various issues, including the health-related concerns of those American players over in Korea. So if somebody wants to check out our lunch bell piece from today at philliesbell.com or at Phillies Bell on Twitter or Facebook, they can find a link to it. That's a really good interview, and it's just one of a number of great items that we have stuffed in today's lunch bell.
That's awesome. And of course, you can find the home for Phillies Talk podcast over at fightingphillies.com. If you have a topic you want us to bring up on the show, or a concern, or anything like that, you can reach me at rich@fightingphillies.com. and be glad to pick a topic to talk about. We'll research it. And, you know, if you have a special request, we're certainly up for that. And I wanted to thank our last week's guest on the program again, Mr. Lou Schiff. He's over at Baseball and the Law. You can Google that on Twitter there. Search it on Twitter and you'll come up with his posts as well. Constantly updating his history pieces. And I can't wait to the next podcast already, Matt. We'll start to get our topics on order for the next show. And hopefully we're keeping a lot of listeners out there entertained.
Just can't wait till we can get past talking about COVID-19 and the coronavirus, Rich, but I have a feeling we'll be talking about that for a little while to come.
Yes, we will. Well, everybody stay safe out there. Wash the hands, wear the masks, be well, and we'll talk to you on the next edition of Phillies Talk Podcast.
Stay healthy, everyone.